Welcome to the Metcalf FutureLink podcast, where we explore the latest trends, technologies, and ideas shaping the future of the internet and beyond. Join us as we delve into artificial intelligence, virtual reality, blockchain, and more, with expert guests and insightful discussions. Whether you're a tech enthusiast, a business leader, or simply curious about what's next, this podcast is for you. So please sit back, relax, and let's explore the exciting world of tomorrow.
Welcome to the Metcalf FutureLink podcast. Today I have Amanda Cassatt, and Amanda is the author of Web3 Marketing, the world's first book about the marketing and positioning of Web3. I highly recommend reading it. That Web3 Marketing is a must read for anyone in digital marketing. The book explains Web3 marketing concepts clearly, with also practical examples and case studies. In my opinion, is well organized and engaging to read. Amanda, founder and CEO of Serotonin. Serotonin is a leading Web3 marketing agency. She is also a notable Web3 product builder and really experienced marketer who has helped bring some of the leading blockchain companies to market. And she is the former chief marketing officer of Consensus as well. Her career in Web2 and Web3 is full of significant experience. Today, we will both get to learn about Amanda's background for inspiration and draw attention to critical topics in the area of Web3 marketing and PR. Yes, finally. Hi, Amanda. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course, it's my pleasure. Please, we can start off. Tell us about briefly about your background with your words.
So I thought I wanted to be a journalist. I started working at the Huffington Post for Arianna Huffington. Learned a lot very quickly about how content worked on the internet, namely how hard it was going to be considering things like the double spend problem for online creators to get paid for their work. Yeah. And at the time, the Huffington Post offered a blogging platform where people created content for free. And then the publication served ads across it and took home 100% of the revenue. So that thing had huge margins. I knew that something had to change and there was going to be some kind of pushback about the cost of online content and creators. So I left and started a company called Slant, where we had a bit of a different business model. We brought in creators to create on the platform. We optimized their content and helped them learn how to market it on different social platforms. And then we offered our creators 70% of the value from ads that we served across the content. We ended up in micropayment-based business model, since a lot of the times in order to pay out 70%, we ended up not only splitting the dollar, but splitting cents. And even though that business model works logically and we were growing really fast, there are a lot of practical challenges with it in an environment where Web2 style payments are the norm because of all the transaction fees. So I got really curious to learn about payments and started going to payments meetups and meeting people that cared about payments in New York, and stumbled on Ethereum in its fairly early days. Once I figured out what it was, which took a moment because there was a lot of technical jargon around it, I realized that it was going to transform not just my business, but enable all kinds of business logic that makes sense, but doesn't work practically in a Web2 context. And my eyes were opened. I realized I needed to join the circus. And so when an opportunity arose to join Consensus as its first chief marketing officer, fairly early on, I jumped at that opportunity, joined and built the first Web3 marketing team. We didn't really call it Web3 at the time, but built that team. We played a role in bringing Ethereum to market, along with products like MetaMask, Infura, Truffle, Gitcoin, the Consensus brand itself, the Ethereal content series. And after about 4 years of that, we felt that Ethereum was across the crucial safety line, wanted to use the best practices we developed over those 4 years to help grow the ecosystem with the next generation of L1s, L2s, DAOs, DeFi, NFTs, Web3 utilities, Web3 infrastructure, plus traditional Web2 companies coming into Web3. And for that reason, we started Serotonin, which quickly grew grew to become the largest Web3 marketing firm, has since expanded into other services such as recruiting, and is now about 100 people worldwide. We've also used the profits from our business to build software companies, raise venture capital into them, and spin them out. The first one of those was Mojito in 2021, which is the leading NFT e-commerce platform used by Sotheby's, Creative Artists Agency, and many others. And Franklin, which is the leading hybrid cash and crypto payroll company that is bringing the back office and web the back office into Web3 so that startups can pay their teams in crypto in a tax compliant way. And that brings us up to today.
Yeah, it's amazing. A lot of things. And you had a literally front row seat to witness the emergence of Web3 during the you as a chief marketing officer of Consensus. I think it's from 2016 and to 2019, right?
Right. So, and hopefully not just a front row seat watching, hopefully was on stage, because the process of connecting Ethereum, what it is, what it can become, with all of the people that would be excited about it and resonate with it if only they understood it and knew about it, I think that played a crucial role in its growth to become the leading, most robust blockchain network with the strongest community, the most developers, because we were able to bridge that gap between the technology, what it is, what it represents, and the people that were going to get excited about it and build on it very early, so that it had an advantage getting a lot of those network effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you are talking about also in your book, the clearly and with honest, marketing wasn't a common skill set among the core of builders working on an early Ethereum, right? And I'm just curious about your position yourself as the first Web3 marketer. What are you learning from running your own venture after your career at Consensus?
So when I first came into Consensus, there was a lot of wariness about doing marketing. And that makes a lot of sense to me. People thought of marketing as advertising, Web2 style. They thought about paid shills hawking vitamin waters on Instagram, people trying to sell you things that you don't need, people clogging up your magazines and your websites with ads, and also the standard mechanisms for growing Ethereum just weren't going to work. The idea that you could acquire a user to Ethereum, like a dev building in Solidity, for a certain dollar amount, and then measure the ROI for Ethereum growth based on having done that is ludicrous, right? There wasn't an obvious standard attribution model. We had to build a lot of this from scratch, and it seemed almost insurmountable or even unnecessary, undoable. So we had to reinvent kind of a definition of marketing, which is more of a matching exercise. It's more of figuring out how a project can talk about itself in a way that connects it with its potential audience and community, and then connecting the dots so that messaging can reach that potential audience and community and convert them to building or joining or whatever it is. So it's really matching two things that if only they were able to connect, would connect. It's not selling people something they don't want. It's doing that matching exercise. Then it's solving the 0-to-1 problem of how to plug first community members into a Web3 incentive system. And then it's the practice of gradually decentralizing your marketing functions as well as your other functions away to your community as you grow.
Yeah, exactly. And also you are talking about your book, the Web3 marketing funnel, it's engagement and how you use about also retention. I think it's still in this era in Web3, I don't know what are you thinking about, but there was no template for marketing in Web3. But your book is literally it's a big template. It's you need to read and you need to put your experience. What is your product and what is your path? And you need to figure it out. And I'm curious about, can you share, please, what central message are you hoping your readers take away from it?
I would say that the biggest difference between marketing in Web2 and traditional contexts and the new marketing is that in Web2 and traditional contexts, you have customers or consumers and you hold them at arm's length and they're not owners in your project. And Web3 is all about incentive design and building those people in and collapsing the distinctions between the categories of builder or team and user and investor, and getting all of those folks economically and mission aligned into a community. And those communities should have skin in the game. And it's all about designing those incentives and plugging people into them, as opposed to just trying to sell people something, which in Web 2 just turns into an arbitrage between the cost to acquire a customer and lifetime customer value. And that arbitrage takes place on these third-party platforms like Google Ads, like the various Meta business suites, where you're paying the piper forever in order to continue reaching your own audience in order to grow. And in Web 3, the sky's really the limit, because you're building ground up, incentive aligned, skin in the game communities. And there's no arb. Everybody's incentivized to keep on growing the project, and there's no ceiling.
Are you struggling to get the media attention your business deserves? Do you want to boost your brand awareness and establish yourself as an industry leader? We are providing not a press release publishing in the blind link, but an actual article on top tier media. With our team of experienced PR professionals and journalists, we'll help you craft compelling stories and pitch them to top tier media outlets. From Forbes to TechCrunch and Bloomberg US, VentureBeat and Yahoo Finance, we'll work tirelessly to get your business the coverage it deserves. Let Pyrex.co help you take your business to the next level with our top-tier media coverage service. Visit our website today to learn more and schedule a free consultation.
And what inspired you to write a book? And why now you just felt like I need to write and also publish? Why now?
So I've been thinking about the same subject matter for nearly 8 years. And Consensus, that with the Web3 marketing team we built there, and then with Serotonin, our small group of professionals has been backstage, behind the scenes, helping execute more Web3 project launches and growth campaigns than any other group of people ever. And so we have had the chance and luck to be able to do a lot of pattern matching and to figure out what works based on that wealth of experience. And so when an editor at Wiley, the Business Books Press, contacted me saying that they wanted to acquire a book on Web3 marketing, that they'd come to me first, it was a no-brainer for me to basically accept and say I would write it. And I was able to write it actually pretty quickly, because I always knew I was going to write a book about this, but I needed that fire lit for me of that acquisitions editor reaching out in order to set a deadline, in order to make it happen. So I really appreciate that synchronicity from the universe that happened, that I was able to take some days away from my normal responsibilities at Serotonin and really focus on writing this book, that I had an incredible research assistant supporting me, and that we were able to get this out before this next adoption cycle, so that this, you know, exists and is a tool in the toolkit of founders and investors and marketers.
How many languages available for your book at the moment?
So right now it's in English, which is a lot. there's a Chinese publisher that's actually bought the rights to publish it in Mandarin, and that's going to be coming out later this year, perhaps next.
Amazing.
I connected you with a publisher about the opportunity to publish it in Turkey, which I think would be very cool. And basically, like, you sort of sign over a lot of these rights. And so it ends up in the hands of the publisher where they want to distribute it, but I can always kind of push on it. And when there is a company like this Chinese publishing house that comes in and says, we want to buy the rights in this language, that's obviously, you know, a nice financial motivator for the publisher.
Yeah, it's amazing. Hopefully you can publish your book with Turkish, also for Turkish audience, and probably like Turkish audiences can really like, it's excited for your book. And yeah, writing a book is also like complex process, right? I'm working on it, my project, but it's not easy. And what was some challenges you faced during this process?
Well, I don't know about challenges. I was so fortunate that I had all these years of experience thinking about the same thing over and over. So it really flowed when I started writing. My process was, after signing the contract and setting an initial deadline for the draft, I created an outline from start to finish, what I was going to write into the book. And then I wrote the book the first draft on mobile. I wrote it on the notes application with my thumbs, and my thumbs really hurt by the end of 10 days. And I committed to writing 3,000 words a day into the outline on my thumbs. And it took a couple weeks, wrote 50, 60,000 words and just wrote it from top to bottom without using the internet, without checking any sources, had a lot of gaps for looking up an exact factor citation later, because I wrote it almost completely from memory in the first draft. I got it all out on the page from the very start to the very end. And then I started doing kind of laps with a research assistant. And so he started going through, starting at the beginning, once I'd gotten to the end, and he was smoothing out style. He was adding citations. He was doing fact checking and ensuring that everything was accurate. Then once I'd gone through and he'd gone through, I went through one more time. He went through one more time. Then we turned it into the publisher. The publisher had a couple of different stages of editors go through it. And he and I each went through it once after each of their editors went through it. Then I corrected final proofs in the fall. And then it came out in the US in April of this year, 2023. So it's actually pretty fast. Like we signed the deal in spring, maybe in May of 2022. And the book was actually out in April of 2023. And I wrote the bulk of it in July and August last year. And it was really important to me to get it into market quickly because one, I wanted to make sure to capture the interest in Web3 that's going to come in this next market cycle. And I didn't know exactly when that cycle was going to happen. And so the sooner I had the book out, the sooner I would be prepared for that cycle happening and it wouldn't catch me, you know, without the book out. And second, I felt pretty confident that I could make the book pretty evergreen. And so, you know, by having it out sooner, it wasn't going to lose relevance faster because a lot of the book is focused on the history of how Web 1 came into existence, how that transitioned into Web 2, how that transitioned into Web 3, then explaining L1s, L2s, DAOs, DeFi, NFTs, infrastructure, utilities, retroactive distributions, allow lists, claimables, just putting tools in the toolkits of marketers and non-technical people so they can start reusing this. That's most of the book. And that stuff is completely evergreen because it is simply capabilities of the blockchain and story and values and mission of how this community arose from specific kind of historical circumstances and the activities of specific people. And so 2/3 of it is indisputably evergreen and just info that everybody needs to know who's interested in this. And the final bit is a bit more tactical, tangible, ticky-tacky stuff. Some examples of projects that we've worked on that have used these strategies successfully or unsuccessfully in specific ways, talking about the Web 2.5 and the stage that we're at right now that I think we're going to be at for a while in terms of traditional Web 2 company adoption. And so there's no harm in getting it out sooner rather than later. The one funny thing was I was turning in final proofs right as Celsius, BlockFi, FTX, after all these things were collapsing and changing and there were many things in the book. And I had to call up the publisher and say, you know, you just got to let me change this thing. I think this is going to be a real sea change in the industry and how we think about some of these centralized players. So you've got to let me add color to, you know, the places where I mentioned them. And they fortunately let me do that. So it feels very correct and relevant in today's world, having been, you know, bulk written about a year ago.
Exactly. And I want to ask, what is your favorite part of the book without giving too much spoiler? And for example, mine was like chapter 3, the evolution of Ethereum into Web3. Like I really enjoy to read all of the history with your comments. And also like it's chapter 11, because like I'm also a marketer and like engagement and use. You are explaining really basic and readable, like you are starting to tell, for example, like product websites and basic Web3 product website, how should looking that way. And I'm curious, like, what is your favorite part of the book?
So my actual favorite part of the book and my favorite anecdote from the book is it's actually pretty late in the book. It's in chapter 10. And so the book weaves together three different narratives. It's the historical circumstances that Web 1, Web 2, Web 3, Ethereum, how all that goes together, mixed with my personal story, mixed with the ticky-tacky of starting the Web 3 marketing team at Consensus, how that turned into Serotonin, my kind of professional journey. And those things are all kind of braided into this story. And we get to this only a little bit later, but the launch of the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance is probably the most important thing in Ethereum history that most people forget about. And it was a press campaign that really lit the spark of attention, positive attention on Ethereum after the negative attention of the Ethereum DAO hack. And for the first time, when you Google Ethereum, you didn't just get Vitalik Buterin, you know, 19-year-old Russian-born Canadian prodigy. You also got Microsoft. You also got Santander, Intel. And suddenly, with the announcement, this whole group of well-known household name enterprises were exploring, experimenting seriously with Ethereum. The news of that, which was covered by every single press outlet in February of 2017, that news added so much legitimacy to what we were building that it ended up setting off a ton of investment activity, which sparked price activity, which sparked more media coverage, which led to a lot of developers and investors and entrepreneurs learning about Ethereum, which led to more people coming to Ethereum events, which led to more building, which led to more applications. And so, you know, that was the spark, and we blew oxygen on it, and it really turned into, it accelerated the pace of adoption of this movement by a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, it speaks to what marketing means to me and what marketing should be, which is the actual practice of getting things done in this world, like making things be different than what they would have been if you hadn't gotten involved in them. Mm-hmm. Make this happen, making, connecting people so they can actually do something with something. And we did that. And we did it with a really powerful technology, Ethereum, that we were working with. The whole thing would not have worked if not for the brilliance of Ethereum itself. But I'm really proud of the impact that we were able to have as marketers, as community builders in that specific moment that I think has had a lasting impact for the space in general.
And I'm sure Turkish Web3 developers and marketers are eagerly awaiting the opportunity to connect with your book in Turkish, because it's a lot and it's really good guide for every marketer and builders, I think. So it's now that you've written this book, and what is next for you?
So a couple of different things. Serotonin is expanding and growing really quickly. We are growing in regions of the world beyond the US, where I think we have the most brand recognition, specifically in APAC. And we're going to be opening an APAC office, I think, in Hong Kong later this year. We're also exploring MENA and growing a lot in Europe. So that's one arena that's really exciting. The second, we have our third product launching on October 1st. And I say this now, we're still in July. So I hope we stick to that deadline. Knock on wood. I'm actually physically knocking on wood right now. I don't know if you have that same superstition in Turkey, but it's just, you know, when you say something to get good luck around it, make sure it actually happens. But we're launching this platform. We're actually keeping it inside of Serotonin instead of spinning it out. And what it is a platformized self-serve version of what we do at Serotonin. So access to our media, how to reach out to them, access to everything we do around events, access to everything we do around growth and content marketing, that's self-serve and resources. And the idea is for earlier stage Web3 projects and companies and teams to be able to get plugged into our network and our ecosystem and our capabilities in a more self-serve way. And in turn, that's going to allow us to scale our impact way more efficiently than if we're only scaling our one-to-one services business. So we're really excited to launch that and bring in our first community members.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, I'm looking forward to see also. So you just back from ETH Paris, and what were the highlights for you there, and what has changed since last year? What was your observation?
Well, it's L2 summer. And I think when Celo decided to become an Ethereum L2, that plus base from Coinbase, plus all of the growth that we've seen with the Optimism stack and with Polygon and with Arbitrum, really, and with Consensus launching its own L2 Linea, really just confirms that it's L2 summer, and that's the place where a lot of the exciting things are happening. So that's very cool. Then we're seeing a lot of ZK integrations, which I'm super excited about. So zero knowledge proofs, enabling privacy at different layers of the stack. They're really cool ZK L1s like Ilio. There's ZK getting integrated into Ethereum and into Polygon in some very cool ways. And that's going to allow business logic that requires some sort of privacy, as opposed to putting all data straight out on the public Ethereum blockchain. That's going to allow a lot of business logic that hasn't made sense to bring on chain to come on chain. And that's going to open up a lot of really cool possibilities. Then I see a lot of interesting innovation around stable coins, flat coins, smooth coins, you name it. That's a really crucial element in DeFi. I think we're going to see more DeFi innovation. Some of it in that space. We just saw Aave launch GHO. Speaking of Aave, I think Lens Protocol and some other folks in that space, like CyberConnect, that are doing like inter-wallet messengers. I think that stuff is really cool. I think messaging and social is a really cool use case. I'm excited about RWAs, the real world asset on chain, brings a lot of like non-correlated assets into the space, grows the total amount of assets that are represented on a blockchain. And then I think a lot of the Web2 use cases for membership, rewards, loyalty, I think that's going to bring a lot of consumers on chain and a lot of businesses on chain. And finally, I know I'm layering a lot on here, but I want to get it all out. I'm really excited for the convergence of AI and blockchain. And I think that happens in a few different ways. I think, you know, one thing that's exciting is content provenance on chain in a world where there's this huge content creation capability asymmetry. AIs can, you know, make infinite deepfakes, and people are going to presume that content is synthetic rather than original, rather than authentic by default, which is flipped from what we imagine right now. And so you're going to require authentication on chain in order to prove the provenance of a piece of content. And the way to do this is blockchain. And so I think that's one convergence point. I think the second big convergence point is AI agents, I think, are going to, on behalf of human beings, be conducting the majority of all transactions. And they're going to be transacting, you know, they're the ultimate digital natives, and they're going to be transacting in the digital native currencies. So they're going to be using stable coins. They're going to be perhaps using ETH and Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. They, you know, as far as I know, might create their own L1 that has its own currency, but the blockchain will help them be able to transparently show and prove their work to their human masters. And I think that's fairly clear that that's going to happen. And then finally, I think AI is helping engineers and non-engineers code on the blockchain and do code audits is going to be really powerful, both as an accelerant to the pace of building and welcoming more people in as builders that, you know, have different kinds of coding skills. And then also getting rid of, being able to verify better that a code base is audited by AI. That's the final argument for CeFi over DeFi, is all of the hacks and bugs and incidents, right? And if you can use AI to verify the security, the quality of a code base, that might be more verification than we've ever had in the past. And it kind of kills the final argument for why CeFi is in any way better than DeFi. So I think that convergence is going to be really powerful.
Yeah. Exactly. It's technology developments in AI and all the blockchain era is really excited. And Amanda, thank you for today. Your insights and experiences are greatly appreciated. And thank you so much for everything you share with us today. And also thank you for taking the time to be part of my show.
Of course, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. Very excited to meet your Turkish audience members and hopefully get to come to Turkey at some point.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.